Hi and welcome. This is Dave. How are you?
Doing well.
Great.
Great. Thank you.
And welcome. Let's start with wins and progress notes. Bring us up to date about what you're up to. One at a time now. Any update for any of you?
What kind of updates do you want to
hear? Just any progress notes, updates, insights, you know, getting new clients, anything that any good news that's inspirational for all of us? Any kind of progress notes? Just to check in. Nothing
I'm
huge.
This is Olga. I'm doing a retreat. I'm doing workshops at a retreat in a couple of weeks, and I'm getting ready for that. So
you're participating or hosting
I'm
it?
I'm facilitating.
Wow. So tell us what you're doing for the retreat.
Well, I'm doing journal writing for personal and spiritual development, and we're going to go through some techniques for both. So that's what I'm working on.
Terrific. Do you do anything while you do a retreat like that to seed your coaching practice?
Well, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to start. So
how do you imagine doing that?
Well, I have cards. I'm going to have cards ready to give them. If there's any, and when there's time for feedback, if there's any issues that arise, you know, whether whatever, I'm going to listen. And I'm going to hopefully tell them that I'll be able to coach them, so that I'm a personal coach and I'm available if they like.
How many people at the retreat?
Well, it's going to be 50. And each I'm doing three sessions, and each one is about, 15 people?
Okay.
So we'll see. Suggestions?
Yes, a couple. One is to seed what you want to offer, and if you want to offer individual coaching, then in your discussions you might mention an illustration, a story, a vignette from a coaching client, and to illustrate a point that you're making and how someone was able to address that and successfully navigate something from a coaching experience in whatever kind of coaching you want to do, and especially if the client is a writer or artist. Another possibility would be to do a demo coaching. Look at my blog called We're Always Showing People How to Respond, something like that. it's in the top five or six most recent ones. There's a vignette in there that is from a coaching demo that I did. There was a group of about 50 people at a national meeting that I was doing training for them to develop an internal mentoring program. And I did a demo coaching. One of the, and this was a national group, a North American group of mentors for, I can't, you know, reveal too much, but they were mentors for entire groups of people. So one of the mentors agreed to do mentor coaching with me around a challenge he was having, and that vividly demonstrated the process for the whole group. And of course, I was contacted after that to do individual mentor coaching for some of the people. So if that's something that you can do. I set a 15-minute time limit, for example, and it's a coach to coach.
Okay, thank you.
And when you do something like that, be especially mindful, as you know from your training, to really circumscribe the focus, what someone wants to focus on, and to determine from the beginning what they want to walk away with, what they want to get out of it. So you've bracketed that, you've created a format for effectiveness, just like you would with any coaching session. Make sense?
Makes sense.
Well, good luck. We'll be eager to hear how things go.
I will. Well, we'll still be meeting, so I will. I will do that.
Great. When is the workshop?
It's in the 27th, I believe it is.
Of this month?
Mm-hmm, this month.
Outstanding. Sounds great.
Okay.
Well, super. Thank you. Who else?
Yeah, thank you, Olga. This is Shakuntala.
Hi.
Thanks for bringing that up, because I'm saying, what do I have to update? Well, I'm actually doing a 4-day retreat starting tomorrow with one client, and so that was helpful. I am going to look up the blog, and what I'm doing with her will be some coaching, although I don't know that I feel totally confident with this, how I'm going to integrate this type of coaching in that'll be different than what I generally do. I don't know. I just feel like I'm not quite ready yet.
That's understandable.
Okay, good, because I really feel like I'm behind, even though, I mean, I've read up to through. You know, I just have a quick question before I continue on the reading. David, is it the, am I supposed to be going by the, just pull this up on the computer, the syllabus here in terms of the module, so that I make sure that I'm on the right module?
Yes.
Is that, okay.
Yes, we are at seminar 4 today, and that's module 2, and we're going to talk about, during the seminar, we're going to talk about step 5, which is map changes. We've talked about the first 4 steps thus far. We're going to spend the entire seminar on mapping change.
Okay, well,
does that answer your question?
Yes, and I'm relieved, because I thought we were supposed to have read up through module 4, which I'm not quite done with reading module 4, but I'm like, gosh, this is a lot of information. I feel very lost. So I'm glad you brought me on module 2.
I haven't even gotten that far in the reading.
I'm glad to know that. So anyway,
I'm having trouble getting through module 3 myself.
Oh, well, I'm glad. So I feel like I can take a breath. So that's what I'm doing. I'm working on that. That starts tomorrow. It's for 4 days, and it's going to be coaching, hypnotherapy, guided meditation. There'll be a bit of journaling in terms of standing in your future, journaling.
How big is that group?
It's only one student.
One person for 4 days?
4 days, yep.
Wow, that's an intensive.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what do you charge for something like that?
Well, it's a student of mine, so the fee is $750 a day, which is very reasonable, I think,
very.
10 a.m. to 8 p.m., and the student takes care of all the preparations for the food and all that, and pays for the all of the expenses related to that.
Well, that's nice.
So, yeah, that
should be very interesting, that kind of intensive.
Yeah, it's great. I love them. I've done a fair amount of them. I really enjoy them. So it's coaching, it's alchemical hypnotherapy, it's yoga nidra.
Could you do the same thing with 8 to 10 students for the same fee per person? And do it in a group format?
Yes, I would like to build up to doing more groups. The most I've ever worked with is 2 people so far.
Uh-huh.
2 people. So I definitely want to grow and do more group facilitating.
Yeah, that sounds ideal, because that group process can take on a life of its own in growing the group wisdom through the processes of what you're doing and how you're guiding that. So that sounds really exciting. And I think that's a good fee to stay with, even up through 8 or 10 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
So what happens is I wind up partnering with the client, whereas if there's 2 people in the class, they can partner with each other.
Uh-huh.
So a bigger group would be great.
That's super. Great progress note.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Amy, what's going on? Is Amy with us?
I haven't heard her.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, let's spend just a bit of time. If you have any challenges with either the reading or with any of your clients that you'd like to talk about, or any issues or aspects that you'd like to talk more about before we move into the material today? Anything that would be helpful to you for us to talk about as a group?
Not so much. I'm relieved that I don't have to read as much as I thought.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, if there's not something that you'd like to discuss, I'll move into the material, and then we can have more time for discussion at the end.
Sure.
So, last call for anything? Okay. Well, we've talked about the first four steps of the roadmap thus far. Recognize authorship, own your present story, assess the plots and the storylines, and decide what to change. Today we're going to talk about mapping changes. Now again, even though you'll see in the curriculum and the corresponding workbook components that it seems like a progression in terms of the steps and work pages and exercises for each of the steps, this is not the sequence that you'll go through unless you just decide to do the workbook with a group, a coaching group. This is something that really is more for your information, ways to listen how people are constructing a story, which will tell you a great deal about them, and how to begin to formulate what you're hearing and to think about how you're going to have conversations with them that's going to further their goal and create changes that last. So today we're going to talk about step five, map changes. Insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story, as we've talked about before. How many people do you know, for example, who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with, but yet haven't changed? Now, underlying causes are always present for any issues, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a coaching approach is to use causes, feelings, and history as information to focus on now and plan for next. At times, simply doing what's currently effective dissolves barriers. Jung said, some problems you can't solve, you just have to outlive them. And people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices. For example, decisions that are difficult or rare, things that don't come up very often or have never come up before, things for which they don't get feedback, or when they have trouble translating into understandable terms, or simply when they persist in reentering the old story, which etches it further in the brain each time. Now, there are six crucial elements to map change. I want to talk about how to understand and incorporate each of these six, which is really an outline to master your story, your life story, or whatever story you're focusing on. The first is regulate states of mind. Now, this is so important. We're going to spend an entire seminar on this, and there's an entire module that's dedicated to this, but this is just kind of an introduction. So let me give you an example here.
Excuse me, Dave?
Yes.
Are we on a particular page, or should I be taking notes?
Remember, I emphasized that I don't reiterate anything in the curriculum.
Okay.
So that's in addition to what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is in the outline that you, had access to and hopefully printed. So I'm just operating from that outline also.
Okay,
I have the same outline you do.
Things.
Does that make sense?
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Okay. So an example of regulating states of mind, Dr. Vernon Smith won a Nobel Prize in economics, in part by demonstrating how market bubbles are created. He did a series of trading experiments with economics graduate students. They were actually informed the fair value of a security as $3. Now, the traders knew the actual worth of the security, which is a significant advantage over the normal Wall Street situation, because in the stock market, it's really not a market, but it's an auction, and a stock is worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for it. Now, but they were told the actual fair value of $3. So what happened when they started bidding? They still ran the price up significantly past the $3 mark. and they got to almost $6. And when other traders in the experiment stopped paying a premium, the laboratory market crashed. Now, in a second experiment, same group, they formed another smaller bubble. They got into the mid-$4 before they stopped and people stopped paying premium and the market crashed. So it wasn't until the third time around that they wised up enough to stay with the security's actual value, even though they had known it from the start. When Dr. Smith repeated that experiment with finance professors and other economic specialists, really seasoned people, they formed the similar kind of bubbles, although they weren't as extreme, but there were two sets of bubbles followed by crashes, and then it wasn't until the third time that they stuck to the value. So what happens here? Bubbles are formed by optimism and collective tilt, getting in a feedback loop. Increasing prices stimulate optimism, causing more buying with price increases until the bubble, which is to say the state of mind, shifts. It's the equivalent of the child who says, you know, the emperor doesn't really have any clothes on. This seemingly irrational force that overrides our logic and knowledge and causes us to believe that rising prices will continue to rise indefinitely, or at least as long as we're betting on them, is called human behavior. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and then how we process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing versus editing. Two different functions, two different states of mind, so it's useful not to try to mix the two. When someone's in an emotional state, they're overbalanced toward right brain response, the feeling brain. In extreme stress, the emotional brain can hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So what do you do in an instance like this? Your brain is working against you. Well, we're going to explore this fully in Session 6, Master States of Mind, and an entire module dedicated to this. But just as a kind of précis here, when you're in any state of upset or any state of altered state of mind, the first order of business is to regulate feelings and restore a cool state, a balance of left and right brain, emotional and intellectual. Poker players call it tilt. When you lose big or win big, you're emotional and inclined to play your last hand or your leftover emotion. So with any kind of tilt, break the state of mind. Step away from the table. Whether it's a poker, conference, or dinner table, take a walk. Wash your hands and face with cold water. Breathe deeply. Take a time out. Even sleep on it. Let me think about that and get back to you is a decision. Now, we're going to go through this in a much more systematic way when we get there. But this is just really, as I said, an overview, because the brain equation for good, balanced decisions is right brain emotional plus left brain logical and intellectual equals a balanced decision. The number two element to map changes: the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency. It's like saying all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, the channel, change your thoughts. Now, the bad news is if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. You get what you focus on, not what you want. And here's the part of the reason behind this. According to quantum physics, we each generate energy frequencies or vibrations. We project energy in our emotions and thoughts that are the source of what and who we attract, as well as the basis of our sense of well-being. The quantum Zeno effect says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain's structure. In other words, the brain rewires. Now, This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These new brain connections, when consistently focused on, become hardwired and become mind maps, and then influence the reality that we see. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on solutions, on possibilities. But if you focus on problems, existing problems, the already existing circuitry is further etched in the brain. This is how people can get stuck in therapy. And neuroscience validates that it's not the understanding of the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but an awareness of choice. Now, the law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If you lay a nail and a paper clip on a table side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip. The reason is the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction. It's the same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, that it creates significant power. Now, the law of attraction won't give you what you want. It'll give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you, trust me on that one, or manifest a pizza. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. You know, in the film The Secret, they talk about the three components of ask, believe, and receive. I think the third component is a little bit misrepresented because you have to work at it. You have to ask, believe, and then create. And in fact, my grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 4 decades before it was released. She said, wishes don't wash dishes. Now, the paradox is that we don't attract what we want, but we attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Your unconscious does not register positive or negative, just the focus. It's kind of like the old-style camera, that the image can either be a negative or a print, but it's the same image. Your unconscious is that image. The power of focus is whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. Here are examples of wrong things, or things that won't work. I want to get out of debt. Focus is on debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on overweight. Now here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray put this in a very succinct way. He said, your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. So notice which people worry about illness, which talk about pains or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So focus on possibilities instead of problems, desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to have and add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you want, what you don't want then falls away, kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. The energy now we're talking about is not the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but that of an energy field, this invisible, very real connection. Think about how you can know as soon as someone walks in the room. You instinctively know whether they're warm and engaging, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field, and you can tap into and resonate with this field, a quantum field of possibility. In fact, Einstein called this the unified field theory. He said that basically the human mind and body are bundles of energy, and we interact with another person who's another bundle of energy and create a shared field. And when we interact with a group of people, it's a collective field. This is how we can read people, focus our choices, determine the flow of our future. So we project energy frequencies and, like a magnet, attract what we focus on. If we focus on the negative and on problems, that'll be what we create. If we focus on the positive and on solutions, that'll also be what we create. Now, the addendum to this is that actions have to be in alignment with thinking. Negative or positive results don't just happen. They come about as the result of actions. Consistent negative thoughts send negative chemicals into the body, and dis-ease results. So when you're grounded and connected, now think about these being actually physics terms. When you're grounded and connected to yourself, it opens doors and creates synchronicities. And another term is in the zone. And this is the whole psychology of flow, which is really a state of mind that has been studied in the last couple of decades especially, an internal alignment of your energy field. Your choices set this flow into motion, just as other choices can cause derailment of this process. You set your day in motion when you wake up happy and excited about what you'll do that day, or focus on something positive and empowering. Think about days when nothing goes right. It can usually be traced to an instant when you get disconnected from yourself, like a bad feeling or a disturbing thought, or even just stubbing your toe when you get out of bed. You create the state of mind and set yourself on a particular path. Now, I've touched on this before, but an application here is I, not too long ago, had a couple of people who both presented at the same, very much the same time. And each, one was the CEO and was the owner of a company, and in each of their companies, not related whatsoever, they had significant difficulties in their companies, things that really set a negative tone that had been going on for 1, 2, 3 months, and one for 5 or 6 months. In one, somebody had been killed, unfortunately, at work, just really negative things. So each of these people were getting up every morning and still in a negative state, thinking about, you know, what can go wrong today, you know, what kind of legal stuff, how are they going to make the cut, just all kinds of things. It would instantly pop into their mind. And here's what I suggested to each of them, that we are always asking ourselves questions, questions like, you know, what does this mean? What should I do? When you wake up in the morning, even before you're consciously aware, before you're fully awake, you're asking yourselves questions. And they recognized that, and they recognized how the questions were very different. And I said, those questions instantly set a state of mind in motion. Now, if you want to set a different state of mind in motion, write down 3 questions before you go to bed that you're going to put by your bedside, and as soon as you turn on your lamp, and even before you're fully awake, take that paper and answer those 3 questions. 3 questions that are empowering, that put you in a positive, peak state of mind. When they did that, and they had done that for several days each, when they were each reported back, they talked about what a turnaround it was, that for the entire morning, and often eclipsing the entire day, they were in a very different state of mind, and they were able to engage people at work and the things that they needed to do in a very different way. So the secret, rather than being about wishing for something and get it, is about understanding and refocusing personal energy. Another example, infertility. For someone who has an urgency to get pregnant, the desperation can sabotage intention and create a response in the body that can prevent pregnancy. When you release the urgency and focus positively, it can change the results. A study was done on couples who had 3 consecutive spontaneous miscarriages. And when they did specific work focused on this, over 90% were then able to conceive. The law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative things, good or bad thoughts. You keep coming back what you run away from because it's an engagement. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused emotion. So, from this, just a brief summary overview of this point, the most important principle is focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. Most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to target the specific outcomes you want. Discover all the things that you focus on that you don't want and make a list to cue your awareness, your radar, so that as soon as you begin to fall into thinking about these things, you're aware of it and you can stop and think about what you do want, kind of a to-don't and a to-do list. So be specific about what you don't, what you do want, not just what you don't want in disguise, because that reads by your unconscious as negative. I want a reliable car. Focus on the idea the car may break down and need repairs. I want a relationship in which I'm treated well. Focus on the expectation that you have to counter that you won't be treated well and have to reverse it. So let's do a brief exercise here. I'm going to say just a phrase, and I'd like you to say to yourself, you can say it silently, your wish is my command. And just as you say that silently in response to my phrase, be aware of what you're experiencing in your body. So I'm going to say the phrase, you're going to say, you're going to think, your wish is my command, and just read your body's expression. I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I just worked out and feel invigorated. Would anybody share what your experience was with that?
Sure. This is Shakuntala.
Uh-huh.
And with each of the first, I believe, three statements that you made, I was actually feeling heavier and heavier and more exhausted. And then I think the fourth one was about working out, and I began to feel uplifted. And what was the fifth statement?
Great, thank you. A similar experience,
Similar Olga? Experience, but I found myself smiling when you went into eating healthily. Oh, my God, I can't think of the word.
Yeah.
But I'm eating healthy every day. I found myself wanting to smile, worked out and feeling invigorated, whereas the other one I was like,
Okay.
I was feeling down.
This is an articulate your unconscious exercise. This is what's happening all the time. Whatever you focus on, your unconscious says your wish is my command. So your experience will follow your focus. So this emphasizes how it can be really important to be aware of what you focus on, to focus on exactly what you want, because that's what you're going to experience, and then that's what you're going to create.
What did you call that? Your wish is my command, the subconscious? You said something before that.
It's an articulate your unconscious exercise. Your unconscious being articulated is your wish is my command, because that's what your unconscious is saying. Whatever your focus is, you're consciously focusing on something, your unconscious is saying your wish is my command. Now,
conscious makes it come to life, right? Makes it real.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Please?
Say it again, please.
Dave, I was just wanting to ask a question. What
please.
About the word not? Is it so that the subconscious doesn't actually receive the word not because it's all inclusive? So when I say to myself, I don't want to gain weight or I'm not going to eat that chocolate cake, what your subconscious is actually hearing is, I'm going to eat that chocolate cake and I want to gain weight. Is that
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because remember, the unconscious doesn't do negative or positive, just the focus.
Yeah.
It's not the nuances, because the nuance is an intellectual twist on it. I'm not going to, it's not the focus. The focus is the focus, whether it's the positive or negative component of that. The positive or negative is the intellectual, and that's not what you're responding to. You're responding to the focus. That's how you're aligning your energy field in your brain to focus on the positive, and you're going to get what you focus on, whether it's couched or framed in the positive or negative.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So thinking this way isn't really magical. It just requires discipline. This is why most people don't have the spectacular results. Spectacular results require mind and brain consistently for at least 25 to 30 days without reverting back to the old pattern. And you may naturally be ambivalent or resist change, but that's okay as long as you don't act on it. Now, there are other more complex patterns, behavior and attachment patterns, that will take much longer than this to create an automatic change so that it becomes automatic, so that it becomes the default mode. But the good news on that is that it's not simply the behavior and response, that if it's more complex and you revert back to the original behavior, then as soon as you catch it and get back into what you're doing, it doesn't mean that you start back at square one and have to start all over. You just catch it quickly and you continue. So the pen is in your hand to write your story. And since you're writing your script, are your thoughts worthy? Are they worthy of you? And here are two quotes that are really meaningful, I think. The first is from William James, the father of American psychology. He said, "Wisdom is learning what to overlook." And the other is from my grandmother, the secret critic. She said, "If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right." And that's one of my ultimate life criteria. You know, if you're not having fun, you really aren't doing it right. Here's one final vignette on focus. Then I want to move on to, because we have some other important aspects of mapping changes. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, regret, greed, arrogance, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies. The other is good. It's joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, and compassion." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then finally asked his granddad, "Which wolf wins?" And the wise Cherokee simply said, "The one you feed."
Mm.
Whatever you focus on.
Yeah, because whatever you're thinking is going to happen.
Exactly.
Right? Whatever
exactly.
It is that you're giving the most importance to.
What you put your energy into and align your energy field to focus on. You get what you focus on, not what you want.
Mm.
Important principle. Now, number three, visualize changes. So this is the third crucial element to map change. And this can be especially useful in coaching. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail here because remember I mentioned that there's a book I'm going to send you when I get the final revision. One of the chapters is on visualization. It's called The Old Art and the New Science of Visualization. And it's on a systematic, a scientific way to do a visualization, and on the affirmations that accompany, that are a way to the story that support the visualization. The affirmations help revise mind software, and the visualizations rewire the brain. Actually, a couple of examples: basketball player. And this is. This is one of the seminal studies. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. Another, 30 minutes of practice daily shooting free throws. And a third practiced imagining shooting free throws for at least 5 minutes a day for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. The first group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, actual practice for 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. Third group, practice by visualization only, 23% improvement. Now, since then, studies have shown that there is actually more improvement by visualization because you don't have to do the actual shot, barely miss, self-correct, and all you do nothing but net. You do the visualization again and again of the actual behavior, so there's nothing to correct. It's rewiring the entire time. On brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actually shooting. So, in coaching, what we may do for some clients is to help them create a vision, then to look back to see the path to get there, to back into it. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. Every image draws you toward its conclusion. An image is like a goal. If you create a negative image, like, I can't dance, or I'll look goofy if I really cut loose, then this will be a destination that your brain will draw you to. If you picture yourself as not being able to dance when you go to your party, the image says, I can't dance. You'll stay in that zone of self-image. You create your experience, you can create something else instead. So create an image of your goal and live into it. Now, a focus and visualization exercise, just to apply this. Focus on the weight that feels good to you, an ideal body weight, a true body self. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight. Look at the pictures daily. Write down your ideal body weight range. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body, your true body self. Now, remember, it has to be your body at an ideal weight. You can't do this and lose weight and have Alicia Keys' body. Don't focus on losing weight. Remember, nothing that I've said so far has to do with losing weight or diet or anything that's negative. Don't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism, hereditary body size, slow thyroid, or spirit of Great Aunt Sally that channeled the curse of large size. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. And this is something that as you, one of the things I did and when I practiced psychiatry and psychoanalysis is I started one of the two or three first major eating disorder treatment programs in the country back in the early 80s and worked with actually several thousand people. One thing that I learned to say to each person, and no one ever refuted this or found it to be wrong, when you are entirely present, when you eat each bite, you will never eat symptomatically. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. That's kind of an accountability. If you eat a whole cheesecake and you are accountable and visualize that going throughout your whole body, it's going to be a different matter if you really are responsible and accountable for it instead of just having a bite or two and visualizing that and your body remaining in a very healthy place. Think and feel as though your desire is manifest. Create your body as your life intentionally. So the ABCs here, ask, believe, and create. This is an example, and a couple of you have done this with me in training, so I'll just do the overview here. I was asked by a group of executives to do a seminar with them on writing a first book. First thing I did when I got to the podium is I asked how many in the group had in the last month seen a yellow Jeep. There were 24, I think, in the room at the time. Of the 24, one person raised his hand. I then did a visualization with them, asked them to close their eyes and visualize a yellow Jeep, and went through the whole process of engaging all of the senses, walking up to the Jeep, walking around it, looking at it, opening the door inside, feeling the vibration, the smell, all the senses, looking through the windshield, turning it on, hearing it, the whole process, and then walking away from it, looking back once more to take it in. And I asked them to open their eyes, and if anyone happened to see a yellow Jeep in the next week or so, would they let me know? In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 let me know that they had seen a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? What someone sees, what appears on the radar screen, is determined by belief and assumption. A yellow Jeep was pre-programmed as possibility. Their radar was cued for a yellow Jeep. For example, the most common reason people don't earn more money and accumulate wealth is they don't see themselves as capable of it. I can tell you how much money someone is going to make by listening to their assumptions. Once someone genuinely sees himself or herself as capable of doing it, all sorts of things begin to happen. The amount of wealth or yellow Jeeps existing in the world doesn't change. You just code your radar for possibility. Now, it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're part of your identity. A vision, though, starts at the other end with a successful outcome. If someone has a fear of success or a fear of failure, the visioning process bypasses that fear and etches the successful outcome. This is a little sidebar here. One of the first books I did was Success and the Fear of Success in Women. It was later named one of the 100 most influential professional books of the 20th century. I've changed my mind. Rather than dealing with success or the fear of success in an analytic way, as I talked about in the book and looked at it in, at that time, novel ways, what I see now in terms of mentor coaching is to create a vision, to look at visualization as a much faster, better, more efficient way of directly rewiring the brain and creating the experience of success that someone can live into and back into in terms of the strategy. So there's nothing to be afraid of because they've already experienced it. In the film, The Lookout, Lewis, let me say that in a different way. There is a film called The Lookout. And in it, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell the story if you don't know where it's going. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So here's how and why visualization works. On positive emission tomography, scans of the brain, confirm several things. Visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain. The brain assimilates a mental picture, whether the stimulus is actual from the optic nerve or imagined. The brain can't tell the difference between a mental image from an actual image. Replays of the visualization, such as repeating the vision of having successfully attained the goal, programs neural networks and neuronal pathways to more strongly etch the experience each time. Mental visualization of a complex movement can actually improve performance. PET scans have also established that thoughts result in physical changes in your body. Now, we know that by simply thinking about how when you picture a danger, it can trigger the same body responses of fight and flight. So, when you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into. The brain can't tell it. The brain can't tell who conjured it. You are reality. In fact, the more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. Now, here's a key to this. You don't make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or gets extruded as noise. It can't be relegated to a footnote. It's kind of like, and we're going to talk about this as we get to the P of the roadmap, the last step, program change. The most powerful, and you've heard me say this before, most powerful force in the human psyche is that we revert back to our identity. So whatever changes we go through, we have to also revise the model of who we are and transform the bedrock of our own operating model, our identity of ourselves, in order for that change to be permanent. Otherwise, it doesn't register, it gets extruded as noise, attributed to luck or circumstance, or just relegated to a footnote. That may be why 95% of people who diet gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity, rather than it just happening or belonging to somebody else. Now, and this is important, while your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. Your conscious mind has to incorporate an evolving story to include and assemble that imagery as part of your story. Otherwise, unconscious messages will just get deleted or relegated to the not believable. So the key elements are these three. One is repetition. Neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly, or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of the self. Otherwise, you'll lose the vision. And thirdly, be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. Now, a margin note here. Write it down for review. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory. Then it's gone. Unless it's emotionally significant or unless you work to log it in. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's a final example, and then we'll move to the other components here. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer, hardly breaking 100. He had broken 100 on two occasions by one stroke. He had 299 as his best score. To preserve his sanity while he was in prison, he learned to visualize golf. He would get up and pick out his favorite country club, drive there, get out, warm up, go through the warm-ups, smell the grass, see the sky, take each stroke in a full way, walk up to the ball. He smelled the fragrance of the trees and grass, made each stroke with his entire body. After he was released from his captivity playing golf in his mind, 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matters. The fourth, insight changes the brain. The fourth, the crucial elements to map change here. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, we call it in coaching, a complex new set of neural connections is created. Three parts of the brain light up on fMRI scan during an aha moment, a moment of insight. And that vaults someone into a more creative, integrative, synthetic state of mind. Now, compare that when someone is given information, a fact, a direction, an order. Nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. Now, as important as this insight-induced change is, it's sustained attention that hardwires it into the brain circuit. Five, take action. The world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, and organize are important. But payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. May not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes to produce results. This may be why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. I was a member of a group like that. It was a board of directors of a founding company, and it was exactly like that. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the second semester of junior college, the first year of junior college, owns a lot of real estate on the west side of town. Six, identity transformation. A new experience or idea needs to be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. And as I mentioned, otherwise, this is not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not-me experience or as a kind of fluke or as a one-time happening. The most important thing about a goal is having one. Wisdom is to know the right path, and integrity is to take it. Now, I want to do a kind of a summary overview about the science of change in coaching, because this really brings into focus what we've been talking about in terms of this step of mapping changes. As coaches, we focus on solutions rather than understanding why, on creating options rather than multiple choice or advice or dictates. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experience to really change this wiring. The first requirement, as you know, is to recognize authorship of the story and then to own the story. That precedes understanding, assessing, and changing. Peter Drucker said the most pressing task to teach people how to learn. So let's review some important elements in mapping changes. And these are in your outline. Concentrate on new behaviors rather than on problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying the problem won't solve it. Co-create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental mats. Regulate your state of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning. Left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. Facilitate insight rather than give advice. People can usually also discriminate between inquiries that prompt insight versus attempts at persuasion. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. The power is in the focus. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Facilitate new behavior and guide the development and actualization of new mental maps. Collaboratively conceptualize the mental map, the internal model of the client, in order to facilitate and co-create a new level of mastery. In the event of the client diverting to an old feeling or behavior, simply redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change arises from the continuity, the consistency of that focus. Knowledge conveyed passively is inert. Knowledge generated through insight changes both the mind and the brain. And finally, conceptualize the meta map with the client in order to master and internalize the process. This map, this new story, helps create the outline to incorporate the new experience as the client's own story and also part of an evolving identity. So, what are your thoughts, or what are any questions that you have about this? How does this sound to you? In terms of mapping changes and in terms of looking at understanding these elements as we think about mapping change for the client or helping the client co-create and focus on change. Again, these are not things that are going to come up in any kind of particular order or even come up directly with a client. This is really information for you in terms of listening in an informed way and to help guide the client to creating a different story.
I really appreciate that when you said the subconscious works to make things come true.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the times I think that we have, our subconscious is always thinking about the negative. Why is that?
The subconscious goes where the conscious focus is. We are consciously focusing on the negative. Now, that's a good question. Why is that? Well, let me ask that in a different way. What do you think our most common addiction as human beings is to? An almost ubiquitous addiction. What's your guess?
Addiction?
Yeah, addiction.
Survival.
To what? I didn't hear you.
Oh, I didn't know who you were asking.
That's
anyone.
What did you say? It was for anybody, right?
Yes.
Survival?
That's one possibility. Our most common addiction is to problems.
Oh.
We keep coming back to problems because problems stimulate and activate our brains because of the error detection mechanism, among other things, because of the familiar. We keep going back to what's familiar. We keep going back to what activates the brain, and the problem activates the error detection mechanism. So we tend to look at things in terms of problems, in terms of the negative, as if looking at the negative is going to be a preemptive strike, and it will ensure that we don't have it. But it does just the opposite. It ensures that our active focus and the energy of our entire central nervous system is going to be directed at the negative. So we keep getting what we don't want in that way, because we get what we focus on. And if we focus on the negative, it works. Think about the example of the quick turnaround of the two clients who ask empowering questions when they first woke up, and how it set in motion a whole state of mind that just got elaborated, that they lived into and furthered throughout the day, and were able to make changes in their companies because of that. We follow our focus, so it's very helpful to be consciously aware of what we're focusing on and how natural it is to focus on the negative as if it's going to happen, and as if naming it or trying to avert it before it happens is going to preempt it, which, of course, it doesn't. It just does the opposite. Now, do you have some thoughts about that, about what raised the question for you?
The negative?
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, I just feel like, I mean, I'm one that used to, I'm trying to transition. I'm transitioning.
Uh-huh.
I've been transitioning to more, you know, working it out myself. But I'm wondering, because a lot of the people you hear, the negative, a lot of people you hear, I mean, there's a lot of negative thoughts about, I can't do this, I can't do that, this is in my way, there's always something negative.
See, that's exactly why I emphasize listening carefully to how someone constructs their story,
mm-hmm,
and their narrative, because that tells you their belief system. As soon as someone says that, I immediately want to be able to engage that. That's why I have the agreement with every client,
mm-hmm,
that I can interrupt them at any point, because there may be something that is crucially important at that instant that I think it would be helpful for us to look at. And I want them to be able to interrupt me or clarify. It goes both ways. But I consider anything like that a coachable moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not waiting for some big overarching principle here. I'm doing it as somebody's constructing their story, because that's how they live. That's how their mind and their brain works. And that's what they're creating. So I want to address that, mm-hmm, as soon as they create it, so that they're aware of it. Because everything else that follows is going to be part of that mindset.
Yeah, and Dave, you know, people that are coming for coaching, at least there's some awareness that they need help, right? But a lot of the population, I feel, also has this issue.
Uh-huh.
and they really can't afford coaching, or they're not even aware of how they're living. You know what I'm saying? But so I just wonder, like, why? You know, like, that's my question. Why is it that we're, and I know that a lot of it is probably environment or experiences or, but.
Well, because that's the way our brains are wired. That's the way that we have things that are passed on that are not always passed on in genes, but things that are passed on in terms of beliefs and models. You know, there is a, you know, I grew up noticing, I grew up on a farm and ranch, and what I noticed was that my dad and I would put up an electric fence, that if a cow ever touched her nose to the electric fence, that was the only time she'd ever do it. But every calf she had would never need to do that, would just immediately kind of stop and move away from the electric fence, and even her grandchildren would do the same thing. It was passed on so that generationally, nobody ever needed to touch the fence again, but it was passed on. So how was it passed on? Was it a gene? I have recently seen a neuroscience study that affirmed that and looked at some of the reasons for that, but that's the kind of thing that gets passed on in families, that, you know, early models. For example, we see how our parents responded to money, the meanings they gave it, how they regarded people who had more or less, what they thought money meant. These things weren't taught. Many times they weren't even explicitly said, but yet they were passed on. And they became part of a working model that is passed on in a family and passed on generationally. So this is why, by listening to someone's story very carefully and how they construct their story, is it passive or active? Is it an internal point of reference or an external? Is it first person, or are they distancing themselves from themselves by using second person? All of these ways that they will show you exactly what their working model is, because this is what their story is, what their storyline is, because this is exactly how you can be of help to them. And also to think about, you know, if you want to do this and see the world one person at a time, which is what I did for a long time, or if you think about additional ways that you can benefit people and bring in exponential return of value and income for yourself, whether that's groups, whether that's retreat seminars, whether that's online products, whether that's books, whatever it is, of what you can do to bring benefit to people and be very, very well paid for it. And get exponential return of time, energy, as well as income. Because the need is there, as you said.
Mm-hmm,
and I think that's a very accurate observation. Other thoughts or other questions that this brings up?
Yeah, thank you. That was a great question, Olga. I always like to think of it as we tell on ourselves. With everything we say, we tell on ourselves. You know? So I have a question.
Yeah, the story tells most about the teller.
Yeah, exactly. I love stories. The number six, the identity transformation. Can you say a bit more about that, making the transformation permanent?
Well, that's what I mentioned a couple of times about what we're going to be talking about in terms of the P of Roadmap Programming Change, and how our identity is such a fundamental force of the psyche, that we return to our identity with whatever we do, whatever excursions we make, whatever changes or behaviors we make, unless we also transform that identity. So a way of doing that in an ongoing way with the client is to look at, or just to highlight, you know, I hear you really seeing and experiencing that in a different way, as well as doing it differently, and to just highlight and emphasize that someone is recognizing and having insight about the changes that they're making, because that's changing and evolving how they see themselves and the model that they're operating on. So as we comment about that alongside the behavior and the experience and just the assessment of whether it's working or not, you know, that you know, it sounds like you're experiencing yourself in a different way now. And to be aware of that all the way through and including the integration of experience in terms of their own identity. Because this is as bedrock as one's own identity.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense now in terms of applications?
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about acknowledging one's experiencing themselves differently and highlighting that for them so that they can get it, that they got it.
Exactly, and this is part of what we want to emphasize too is the self-reflection, because that the ability to reflect on one's own experience, to be mindful, to have empathy with oneself, is a huge factor in success. In fact, in the most recent Harvard Business Review, the most recent Scientific American Mind, there was an article in each about the crucial importance of self-reflection in terms of success. And I think it's exactly what we're talking about here, is the ability to be empathic with oneself, to observe and to reflect on oneself, to be mindful, to be aware of what we're thinking and experiencing. And it's something that we're developing, we're helping the client develop with himself or herself. Because it's part of what they experience then that they ultimately won't need us anymore. Because they're internalizing this function that we're co-creating and internalizing that process, and it becomes part of them now. It's metabolized to become part of them. It's no longer something that they're doing, it's something that they are, which is part of the identity. You know, think about like when you eat a piece of broccoli, you don't continue to imagine little molecules of broccoli going to various parts of your body and nurturing your brain, your heart. It just becomes part of you. And that's the process I'm talking about here. It just becomes an internalized process that becomes just part of who you are. Not something you engage in doing. You can call on it and use it like a skill, but it's just part of who you are. And this self-reflective capacity is something we're helping a client develop.
And we can assist them in developing that more deeply and quicker as we develop it ourselves. We'll be able to pass that on, just like that tell.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And the guy who started this whole business in the first place, Thomas Leonard, who was the founder of coaching, said, you know, we just have to be one step ahead of our clients. And then sometimes half a step is enough, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We just got about a minute or so. Any other final thoughts or comments or questions?
You know, I have a quick question about the client handbook again, Dr.
About the what?
The client handbook that I received. I don't know if everybody else received it. Remember?
The what?
Okay. You each received, I believe, the wrong one. My fulfillment house sent the new Money Story client workbook instead of the workbook that you should have gotten. They should be acknowledging that, communicating with you, and sending you the right one, and sending you a label so that you can send the wrong one back.
Okay. They will be sending a label then, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know when or more likely?
They have already shipped out the new one.
Oh, they did? I didn't receive any email.
Well, no, I mean, you should have received an email. It was like a couple of days ago, so it means you should be getting it in the next 3 or 4 days.
And they sent an email saying we shipped your order, but I didn't receive
an email. I got an email that said that they shipped it, but I didn't.
Yeah, I saw that too, and so it'll be a while before I return it because I'm actually going to be away for the next 10 days. So.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, they apologize, and I do too, that they got it wrong.
Okay.
So the correct one will be there. I meant to mention that. Thank you for mentioning that. Well, thanks for all of your input and energy. I appreciate it, and it helps bring things alive. Look forward to picking up with you right here next week. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Hang on one sec. Dave, is there a way that we can communicate with each other?
You have the emails of each other. So that you can when I've sent out group communication, have the emails, you should have the roster.
Okay, but there's no group discussion forum that
I don't the CTA does not do a group forum around this.
Oh, okay. No. All right, very good. Thanks so much.
Okay, you bet.
Thanks, Olga. Have a great day. Bye guys.
See you guys.